Welcome to Forgiven, a podcast to help inspire and empower Christians to live an authentic life. In today's episode, we are discussing how Christians respond to cancel culture.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Forgiven Podcast. And I'm with my my regular co-host here, Logan. Logan, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, sir. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Well, now we got the kid on the block here today, the youngest one on staff. Micah, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Excellent, I'm good. Excellent. And the reason we have Micah on is because Micah is the young kid, right? And he's part of the representative of the culture that we have today. And the topic, as you have heard, is the cancel culture. This is a big issue. There's lots of things for us to talk about, and I'm hoping that we can guide this in the right direction. And the one thing that I wanted to at least do is to make sure that we're all on the same page, because I hear the word cancel culture as someone who is above 30. And what I might be thinking and the connotations that I may have may be totally different to you and might be something which is totally different to you, Micah. So I'm just going to kind of read here. I hate reading these things. I just kind of like to go as my basic thought. But this is kind of what we get in terms of cancel culture. Cancel culture, or called out culture, is a phrase contemporary used within the 2010s and the 2020s, and it's used to refer to a form of ostracism in which someone is thrust out of social or professional circles, whether it be online, on social media, or in person. Those subject to this ostracism are said to have been canceled. It's the popular practice of withdrawing support or canceling public figures and companies after they have done and said something considered objectionable or offensive. It is the current form, I would say, of public shaming. It's the thing that many become too keen to, when people become too keen to ruin other people's lives and made mistakes that many times happen a lot of years ago, and people never ever get the second chance, and that social media is too quick to pile on and police increasingly high standards of political correctness. And so I think it was Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson,
yeah,
that said it is the modern day lynching, or the modern day form of people coming with pitchforks and torches and shaming or ostracizing, or it's almost like a vigilantism. It's probably the best way of putting it. And there are a number of stories that are in the media. We can maybe talk about one or two of them. I know, Logan, you had a number of examples that we were talking about.
Yeah, I'll give one, and I know Micah has a specific one that I want to touch on too. So I guess one of the ones that I want to talk about, at least in secular culture, because I do want to talk about a specific Christian style of cancel culture after. But one of the ones that like really has stuck out to me has been actress Gina Carano. Okay, so
this is the Disney character, right?
Yeah, this is the Disney star, I guess. She was one of the big co-stars on their hit show, The Mandalorian. She's been in a ton of other big projects. And she has come out and said that, and this is an American thing, but she's come out and said she's a Republican, and that to be a Republican today is very similar to being a Jew in 1940s Germany.
During
the Holocaust, where they're being hunted and persecuted for what they believe. Now, do I agree completely with her wording and her thing there? Not necessarily. I don't like the way she went about it, but still, it is true that is what's going on. And then what happened after that is she was completely kicked off of all her ongoing projects with Disney. So she's completely cut from The Mandalorian season 3, all of her cameos in the upcoming like anthology movies, everything, all her other big projects just gone. Her social media accounts were completely harassed. She had to get like private security because people were threatening her and all this crazy stuff. And it's like all because she made a comment, which is partially true, just not maybe necessarily the best wording for it. And that's like really sad and really scary at the same time, that like this person's life was like kind of like put in danger a little bit, and that like everybody just like believed instantly that like this person is essentially like the devil. They equated her, like there were people equating her to Satan.
Wow.
And as I like that's just like utterly ridiculous. Whether you agree with her statement or not, you do not need to treat somebody like that.
And it's popular. It's we can give a whole bunch of examples. And I know even as you were talking, I know that I could think of three or four.
Yeah.
Now, Mikey, you said there was one that you thought was particularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A man named Scott Cawthon, famous for making the Five Nights at Freddy's franchise, which is a popular game among many people. Let me read here. Sorry, it's in my notes. So he was canceled because, and I quote, Cawthon had donated money to several Republicans, including Senate Minority Leader, I might get the name wrong, pardon for my pronunciation, Mitch McConnell, and former President Donald Trump. And that was it. People just, after finding that out, people just raged on him and just wanted him fired from his job. Just constantly.
It was almost like a form of bullying.
Yeah.
It is a form of bullying.
It's just high school bullying. But
now, the things that we're talking about basically are how the liberals have viewed conservatives. I don't think the conservatives are totally innocent on this.
Oh, we are program. Absolutely oh,
yeah.
not.
That's yeah.
And so, and I wanted to introduce, say this. We're not trying to say that one side is right or one side is wrong. We are trying to answer the question of what Christians should view this cancel culture. So just because both examples we have said have been a more political based one does not mean we pick a side either or, just to clear the air on that.
And the problem that I think we will have in this podcast is that there are so many things that we can talk about.
Yep.
It goes so deeply. I was just thinking as I was driving to do the podcast that there were times where I was threatened to be canceled by people based on decisions that I was making having to do with COVID.
Oh yeah.
This is the philosophy and how you should believe. And the other side is this is the philosophy and how you should believe. And if you don't believe this, then there are going to be repercussions. They never said that, but that in fact, what was taking place. And it is certainly an uncomfortable situation. And many times both sides feel, I don't know if you've experienced that, both sides feel like they are being canceled.
Yep.
And so it is very much one of those things where people, the feelings are high, the emotions are high, and what they take from it many times is difficult to process. And so what do we do? How do we deal with the situation like this? What is the response that we have? How do we combat it? How do I, as a pastor, conduct myself? As a Christian, as a leader in my community, how do I combat this thing? Because I don't know if anyone really sees it as a good thing, you know, other than the fact that it might be the weapon that you use to get what you want. You know, there was a quote that I had come across that basically says that evil preaches tolerance until it becomes dominant, and then it tries to silence good. And I thought there's a lot of truth to that. And so maybe the question that we can wrestle with right now is, how do I as a Christian, or how do I as a leader, or how do I as a just an individual in society conduct myself to come against this thing, which is, I think it was very much, it became very much emphasized through social media and internet and the fact that you can say whatever you want behind a computer and not receive any kind of backlash at all.
Yep.
So let's start with you, Micah. What would be your response and you know, how you're responding is going to be to a younger generation that I'm going to be, you know? So as I ask that question, what would be maybe some of the thoughts that you would think of?
What do you mean?
Well, in terms of how do I cancel or how do I respond?
How do you cancel
culture, right?
As an individual, I don't think canceling cancel culture is possible because it is like a mass riot. You can't have one person stand against a riot to stop it because most people in the riot are believing they're delivering justice and doing the right thing.
Okay. And so then the question is, what do we do? Is it one of those things that is so uncontrollable that we can do absolutely nothing about it?
No, I wouldn't say that. And I always say, and I always, this is a, for all our listeners, this is a topic that is very passionate to me. This cancel culture debate and argument has been one that's been put on my heart for a long time now. So I've done a lot of thinking and processing and preparing for this one alone. Yeah. And so, like, I think Micah is right. It is really hard for one person to stand up against a whole crowd of people. I wouldn't say it's not impossible, though, because all it takes is one person to stand up, and then you get another person and another person and another person. I think of, like, the square in China. The guy stood in front of the tank. Like, obviously, that's, like, a completely random, like, one-off scenario. But I just encourage you to know that, like, one person can and should make a difference, because one person does it, then another. But I get what you're saying, too. It is really, really challenging. But this idea of cancel culture is really tough for Christians to handle, because we kind of invented it. There is a large biblical basis of cancel culture in the church and in the Bible.
Okay.
Like, and so...
I'm trying to think. There's a part of me that says, okay, now qualify what you're trying to say. But I'm wondering if I'm going to be opening a Pandora's box that is going to take us in a totally different direction. Yeah. But qualify what you're saying then.
So what I mean by Christians invented cancel culture, it's not entirely true. It is just it's a humanity thing. But the reality is if you have read the Bible, there are many stories of Christians themselves. Well, we'll say Christians at the time themselves, agreeing to this idea of cancel culture. So this one, John 4, we have the woman at the well. This is one of, I think, the Bible's most prominent examples of what we would call modern day cancel culture. So you don't know the story. Jesus is coming into a town. It's late at night, whatever. There's a woman at a well, and she's a Samaritan woman. Okay. So again, for a little more context, Israelites did not like the Samaritans.
No, they're kind of like a half-breeds.
Yeah, they were outcasts. Yeah. They were pariahs, which automatically made them canceled. And so Jesus takes his time to go and talk to this woman who society has completely outcast for the mistakes that she's made. She's had five husbands.
Right.
So she's obviously made a lot of mistakes, and society has said, we're done with you. We don't want to talk to you. All this kind of stuff. And so what Jesus does in that moment is he goes and he sits with her and he tells her, like, hey, like, it's okay. Like, you don't need to worry about what they think. If only they knew what they were missing. And if you come with me, all this stuff. I don't want to get into, like, that other part of the story. I just want to focus on, like, how this woman was completely ostracized for her mistakes. Mm-hmm. And also, it's a simple story, but nobody ostracizes the husband.
Yeah.
But they also got divorced and did that, too. But. Yeah, that's another story.
I think the one that I think of the most is the woman who's caught in adultery, and they wanted to literally cancel.
Yeah,
they were going to throw stones at her until she was dead.
Yeah,
and that whole story to me talks about the innuendos and things having to do with cancel culture. So, there's so many things that I want to talk about with it and I'm just trying to find a way that we can navigate in a way so that we're not all over the place.
Yeah.
And so I'll put that on the shelf for now, and we will talk about the fact of modern day cancel culture. How do we cancel culture? What is a Christian response to the cancel culture? And I just thought I would open that up to you, Micah, and or you, Logan, to say what is it that as Christians, how should we respond, or how do I respond? How do I not be? At least I can say I don't want to be part of this. At the very least, I can say, well, here I am as a passionate follower of Jesus. I want to live for Him. The problem with cancel culture is that it creates a current that kind of forces you to go. It's very much an intimidation aspect, and you begin to hold something just because you were afraid of what other people will respond. And that's why a number of our celebrities have gotten it, because there is such a huge current. But I was asking myself, just based on the fact that as Christians, we believe in this thing called grace. Like, it is unmerited favor. I don't deserve it. And as a result of the fact that I have been given grace, I also need to extend grace. And that becomes the one thing as I'm thinking, how do I not become someone who is involved or gets involved in cancel culture? This has to be the one thing I think is important. I'll just pass that out maybe to Mike and or to you, to Logan. What would your response be? Obviously we all have to answer this question. All of us have to say, how do I not get involved in cancel culture?
Well, the first thing would not to obviously don't outrage over every little thing that happens. The second thing, maybe, possibly, which it is, I hate to say it, but it's a risky move to even say, hey, stop doing this. Like, if somebody doesn't do something wrong, like even like best case scenario, someone doesn't do something wrong and they're getting canceled for it. You have to express, hey, they didn't do anything. And at least, I don't feel like I'm going anywhere.
I think I know where you're going.
Yeah.
There's the aspect of, as an individual, it's very hard. I think you kind of hit on this. As an individual, it's hard to go against the flow. And you're even at a point where you say, well, it doesn't make any difference at all. But there has to come a time where someone has to stand up and say something. And I think that, and maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe the problem is solved best at a community level. Right?
Yeah.
We need to create a counterculture to cancel culture. We need to create a mercy culture.
Yes.
To combat cancel culture.
Yep.
Every time you step into our church, it is a culture of mercy. It's a culture of grace. So yes, you have failed, I think. And as before, as we were just kind of getting prepared for this, you come to the realization that there are probably a number of times that, you know, if everyone knew how stupid I was and that, I would be canceled over something that I did 10 years ago. And the way it is now, even if it was 10 years ago, even if it was acceptable 10 years ago, you are still subject to the punishment and the wrath of those people who have that level of power or that flow, that momentum that has that power. And but if you can somehow, and this doesn't take one Sunday, this takes a concerted and purposeful effort of a congregation that says, we are going to be a group that genuinely loves people no matter what they have done.
Yeah.
And that is a bigger statement than what we think.
And to add on to that, I completely agree. And so Christians, we just have to be ready and willing to get uncomfortable. I think that's a big thing with trying to counter cancel culture here. There's going to be pushback and people are not going to like it. Right? That's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
If you stand up in support of somebody who we say has been canceled, you are likely going to, not likely, you are going to take heat for that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I think we as Christians, and who want to have this avenue of grace and mercy and forgiveness, we have to be willing to accept that, take that awkward and just that feeling of not being liked, being persecuted, we'll say, and put it aside and be like, no, and we stand by, we are going to help people, we are going to show them love and mercy, because that is what Jesus did.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he was ridiculed, he died to show us grace and mercy. So I'm not saying we have to get ready to die necessarily, but that we have to be ready to get uncomfortable. We have to be willing to do that. And
because we're no longer in the majority.
We are in the
We are in the process of being a people who society is seeking to cancel.
Yeah.
Based on things that we term to be biblically true. And I remember reading an article from someone was talking about that, who said, he says, well, this is actually what Jesus said would happen. You are going to suffer for the beliefs that you have. And that's what it was in Jesus' time. And it's something that we have to understand. It is going to be the given. It is going to be the regular, that whenever you stand up for something which is righteous. Now, I think the Bible says that you need to give an answer, right? You need to give an answer of everyone who has the hope for you, but you do it in meekness and you do it in fear. You do it in a way where you're not standing up and having this arrogant attitude. But the truth is that we are going to be living in a society that goes against the flow of what we actually believe.
And I just also, to add to that, we as Christians in this world, we need to be accepting, like, obviously we need to accept everybody, but we also need to recognize that part of that uncomfortability I was talking about is we can't also just immediately treat that person that we're inviting in the same way that we would anybody else. We show them love and we show them grace and we show them mercy. But basically what I'm saying is it's going to be way more work on us Christians, especially changing to a minority, to actually accept and help these people rehabilitate and change for those that have actually done, you know, wrongdoing and such.
Yeah. And we don't have a good track record in some respects in terms of treating people who think or act differently than we do. I remember when I had first gotten here, I had a conversation with an individual, said, well, this particular church, you know, my son had, you know, different preferences and choices in life that they wanted to make. And they basically said to him, well, that person's not welcome here. And I thought with horror, why would that even be the case? Whether you agree totally with this or not, you know, like I said, our track record isn't great. And so as a pastor, as a senior pastor of a church, those are things that concern me. How do I change a current? Right. And how do you start to do that? And if you're a youth pastor or if you're a youth leader, that becomes the challenge for you as well. And I think that it's done now. Again, this is just me. I think you do it 1 week at a time.
Yep.
You don't just do it. You know, you don't just sit there and say, well, this sermon is the end all and be all. You know, even just the purpose of our podcast, as we were talking about the purpose of the podcast, we want to take somebody, and it doesn't matter where you are on the continuum. If you're at a level of 10 out of 100 in the continuum of your growth in Christ, this podcast is not going to take you from 10 to 95.
It's going to take you to 11.
It's going to take you to 11 or 12. And I think that making realistic change, it is always that way, unless there is a sovereign move of God. We're always continually praying for that.
Yeah.
So let's open Pandora's box. Can we do that at this time?
I got really excited. I should have just...
I wanted to try and see. I didn't want to sit there and hear some people say, boy, that was scattered. and the thing is, the temptation is to be. Because before we even, just as we thought, and we're trying to get together and think, what are some good things that we can talk about online to help people and to create authentic and real conversation? And we began to talk about cancel culture. The one thing that we did mention was that, well, cancel culture has been in the church for not just years, for centuries, for millennials it has been. Yeah. And there is scriptural reference for it. And as a pastor, a lot of times... There is directions that people are going that require me as a pastor to say, hey, listen, you're going in the wrong direction. And it's either I found, and it's probably more than one, it is in the area of sin or it is in the area of doctrine. Somehow you are living out some doctrine which you think is biblical and actually it's not. And that happens a lot. And people destroy their life over poor doctrine just as much as they do over sin. Yep. And so those become important things. And sometimes you need to pull a hard line on people because you can't nice them way into correction, right? So I will lay it out for you, Logan, as I know that you're chomping at the bit to talk about.
Very much so.
Why is it that has been a part of the culture and being new to Christianity and not being part of a generation where, you know, my family comes from a long line of Christians, that has always been the thing that has bothered me, right? Why is it that the Christian army is the only ones that shoot their wounded? Right? Why do we cancel people? How many people are not coming to church today because we've made them feel bad for choices that they have made, and all of a sudden they just feel, well, I'm not part of this.
Yeah. So I talked about it a little bit earlier. I jumped the gun, but yeah. So, I mean, so John 4, again, we see, I mean, we had the woman caught in adultery where Jesus says, he was without sin, cast the first stone. Obviously we all have sin. Like, and I'm going to get to that, but what the basis for biblical cancel culture really is, like, it's accountability is what it is supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's what cancel culture is, because honestly, holding people accountable is the right thing to do.
Yeah, you don't grow.
You don't grow if you stay stagnant. And so people that have actually committed real evil acts need to be held accountable for their actions. Okay? And so I'm going to give us a Christian example of this. Okay? Amazing, amazing person, Ravi Zacharias, incredible speaker, has changed the lives of hundreds of thousands of Christians and non-Christians around the world.
Yeah.
Now, if you didn't know, rest in peace. He has passed away. But after his death, there was a heinous amount of sexual abuse allegations that came out against him. And that's sadly, that's not something new for church people and for Christians.
And to the credit of Ravi Zacharias organization, they owned up to it.
The whole board was like, we're investigating it. We see it. It's wrong. Yeah. We're sorry. Yes. We're going to fix it. So, but I bring up his example to say that we Christians, there is a biblical basis for it. So we're kind of eating our own words in a bit of a sense, but the challenge with cancel culture is it's not inherently wrong. People need to be held accountable for their mistakes. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Jesus himself knew that. Jesus knew by going out and by preaching and by doing all of the things that he's doing, by negating the powers of the Roman Empire and all this stuff, he knew there would be consequences and he was willing and ready to take them up.
Okay, so devil's advocate here, if I could. So all of a sudden, I have been involved in something that I haven't, you know, I should not have been doing it. And all of a sudden comes out that I have.
Yeah.
Right? So what should be the response of the church, of the individual?
Of the individual?
Yeah.
The individual.
Let's start with the individual.
So first of all, if it hasn't been reported, you as the individual find out about it, report it. If it's something illegal and all that stuff, obviously, that's like...
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm going that far of saying that it's something that is illegal, but something that would be frowned upon at the church. I all of a sudden I, you know, this is a person that I'm regularly getting drunk or something. Sure. I mean, it's probably not best to use me as an example as the pastor, because that would just be like someone is doing something that is destructive to their life. It's not illegal, but it is something that we kind of see as a church as, well, it's not a good place. Jesus said it's not really good to be drunk with wine all the time. And so how do we, does cancel culture, do we say, well, listen, we don't want to have anything to do with you until you do it. Is that not what you mean or no?
No. So what, in that scenario, I'm talking about people who legitimately break the law and all that stuff. I'm talking about the big cases of cancel culture, because I wouldn't say somebody who is acting in habitual sin is worthy of being canceled or anything like that. There is a consequence for their actions, and it's our job as the individual to keep them accountable for that.
So lovingly restore people.
Yeah.
With grace and mercy.
And I'll give example from, I'll deal with somebody who's dealing with pornography, let's say. That's a pretty real thing. As a former junior youth pastor and stuff, I've had to deal with people that have dealt with that. And I'm going to place myself as an individual and try to remove the pastoral side from it. Mm-hmm. First thing I do is just have an honest conversation with the person and say, like, hey, are you okay? What's going on? What can we do to help you? All that stuff. You don't break them down to the bare nothing. That's just going to hurt them. You don't immediately start telling them you're evil and we're going to you're not welcome here and all that stuff, because it's the opposite. They're actually more welcome here and should be in the church way more if they're dealing with the sin and all that. That's where they should be, is in the church, because we are the common body of believers that should be helping them get through this.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what the capital C church is. It's people coming together to help each other, to to learn how to follow Christ together. That's like partially what the church is. And that's what, in that scenario, that's what an individual should do. You don't ostracize yourself from the person.
Yeah. Like a healthy man doesn't need medicine.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. You don't ostracize yourself from the person. You get in there, and I talked about being uncomfortable. You get uncomfortable. You walk through it with them.
Yeah.
That's what you do as an individual, as best as you can.
The other thing is, and I don't think we recognize this nearly enough, is that failure is kind of the process forward to maturity. I don't know if that resonates or what it means, is that the only way that I have gotten better, the times that I've grown the most, is when I have failed miserably. And if I'm ostracized for that, if all of a sudden I'm at a point where I'm just killed for it, then what happens is I'll never, ever grow. I'll never, ever get past that. I remember a former church that I was in, and the greatest strength that this church had was that they allowed the assistant pastor to make mistakes. They realized that he was young, that he was experienced, or she, most of the time it was I had female assistant pastors, and they made mistakes, and they didn't do the best job, and then they developed into good people because they weren't afraid to make the mistakes. Yeah. You know, that becomes a big thing when you have a community that is full of grace and mercy, right? At the end of the day, with a lot of stuff, it doesn't really matter, right? So go ahead.
I put it in terms of sports. When I first started playing football, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. Like, honestly, I had watched it a little bit, but I didn't know a thing. But I was like, my friends are playing. I want to do some exercise, whatever. I want to play sports. So I'm going to play football. If my coaches who were amazing had just were like, no, you can't cut a kid, get out of here.
Yeah.
If they just ostracized me because I was making too many mistakes, I never would have gotten better. I never would have like gotten to the place where I did. And all that, and achieve the goals that I had wanted to when I played high school football and everything. And so I don't know why Christians have this attitude that you've made a mistake, now you're done.
I think we are bound by self-righteousness. That if I have a self-righteousness, and here's the issue that many times is the problem. For me anyways, if I see someone fall, and I think there's too many things in my life where I've messed up. For me to take the self-righteous road and say I'm better than that individual. If we can get ourselves to that point where we humbly, just authentically love people, I think that resolves a lot of things. Anything to add, Micah, to the scenario as we get talking about how do we do in the church?
What's a younger, like, because like, I'm even, like, I used to think I was young, but like.
Yeah, you're no longer young.
I'm not young anymore. Like, I'm not, so like, I guess I want to, can I, how does like a young person help another young person like through something like this? Because I was like, it's very different today than it was even when I was your age.
Well, you just covered a lot of topics. So which one specifically do you need?
The reason I think you're important on this podcast.
Yes.
Is because I wasn't immersed in this, right? I don't, my connection with social media is far less than it is with you. You know, there was not a time in your life where you have not known life without a cell phone or through any kind of social media. So you're at the level where it has been a given part of your life. And that obviously makes your viewpoint different than mine, because you don't know any other. You have no other reference to go on. You know, and so I'm always wondering, as I try and seek to reach the younger generation, to figure out, well, how do I respond? How do I respond in terms of the church and cancel culture? And is it a problem in and amongst our Christian young people? And, you know, what is it that, you know, what are some of the nuggets that you can give me as I'm kind of the older guy on the block, right? In terms of how do I reach kids to combat Christian culture? How much of a problem is it?
With young people especially, I'll say cancel culture is a large problem, because that's the only time they feel that they can have a voice, right? Is when you're tearing someone down.
Yeah.
Because especially with social media, positive things other than animals, of course, doesn't get recognized. Like if you say something good or like you praise someone, like, what was it? It was like 1 out of 10. Like 9 times out of 10, the negative comment's going to be what's noticed the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're, like even if you're scrolling through like your comments on your own post, you'll mm-hmm. see, oh, hey, that looks amazing. Yo, that's so cool. I really like the framing on that. And you see one where it's like, oh, it's garbage. It's awful. You did this wrong or whatever. The human psyche itself is just going to say, hey, focus on this one thing because yeah. it's already an attack on sure. you rather than sure. something you already think.
It is that much more deeply embedded almost within the DNA of the younger culture, right? So and, you know, for those of you who don't know, maybe why you're going to Bible college.
Yeah.
You're not going to be with us in like 6 weeks. You're kind of off to Bible college. And that, and the idea is for you to be a youth pastor. And this will be one of the biggest issues that you'll have to deal with. And yeah. so the I guess the challenge for you and for every youth pastor who's going into ministry in the future is, so how do I, what would be the things that I would do? Like I'm asking myself that question.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm asking myself, what is it that I do to shine Christ in a situation where the DNA is such that it's the opposite?
Well, I guess maybe how do you then teach somebody that they have a voice when they're not
yeah.
like tearing somebody down?
Yeah. Like you said something as we were kind of preparing and talking about how we're going to go the direction. You basically said this statement. It says, in actuality, mankind, all of mankind should be canceled. Because yeah. we deserve to be canceled because being before a holy God, you know, we have done wrong. And Jesus is the actual antithesis of cancel culture. Now, I'll just let you build on that
yeah.
if you can.
So the idea was, and I don't want to get too theological, but the original sin, we are filled with sin. Every person that comes into this world is inherently sinful. That is just the way it is. And so therefore, by every definition of God's own law and his teaching, we should be dead. We should ultimately be canceled.
Yes.
That is this biblical. This is the way it is.
God cannot be in the same presence as sin.
Exactly.
God is a completely holy God. God is in his complete within his complete rights to cancel us.
Yeah.
And he doesn't.
Yes.
What he does instead is he takes the form of humanity and voluntarily gives up the use of his divine attributes and dies a terrible death on the cross as a gift for us
yeah.
to not be canceled.
He effectively, God canceled himself to allow us to not be here. And so, once you understand that and once you like fully let that sink into your brain that like, I actually shouldn't be here right now. Because of this, and it fully sits in that like I'm only here because Jesus is allowing me to be here.
Yeah.
It takes the idea of cancel culture and it completely throws it out the window for me.
Or at least tips it upside down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So basically, I can't cancel anybody because I should be canceled.
You can't call the kettle
and
back.
I wasn't canceled. I am only here. I'm only here because of something that Jesus did for me, and I don't deserve it at all. Yeah. Pretty powerful stuff. When you stop and think about it, and to incorporate that into the DNA of a body of Christ or as a group, and you might be listening, and you're not part of any kind of group, church. Hopefully, you can find a place where you can have fellowship, and you can kind of sharpen each other. That's probably one of the best reasons that to join for church is that we're trying to sharpen each other and be accountable to each other. That's kind of a powerful thing to dwell on. Now, so with that in mind, is there anything else? Did we forget anything in talking about cancel culture?
I just understanding that. One thing that I do want to talk about is is we still do have to keep people accountable.
Yes.
As a society, there are people that make mistakes, and we do need to keep them accountable. So I don't want to say out with cancel culture, but out with cancel culture, because we don't need to break them down and make them less human beings for the mistakes that they've made. How about instead we as Christians, or just humanity in general, rise up and actually show remorse, grace, mercy, and allow these people to be rehabilitated and actually allow for repentance.
So you're basically saying that it's almost just as dangerous to have a non-cancel culture.
Yes. Because you still need accountability. You still need to follow the law, and you still need
has people. To be a part of us that continues to work so that we're all getting better.
Yeah. Yes. Cancel culture is the first step to redemption, but it's the first step in a marathon.
Yes, I like that.
And nobody's taking any of the other steps.
I like that. That's really well said. It's we kick them to the curb and leave them there. We don't ever help them up after.
Yeah, and that's totally against the grain of the gospel. Yeah. That's because that's what Jesus did not do. Right? And there's that statement, God loved you so much, you know, that he came and died for your sin, but he loves you so much that he refuses to keep you in the condition that you are. He wants you to be just like Jesus. And so there's that whole process. It's called sanctification, right?
Yes.
Any last words for you, Micah, that perhaps we didn't address or go in a direction?
No, not really.
No? I guess if there's one thing that I wanted to say is that there is value to authentic listening, humble, authentic listening, whether someone agrees totally with me or not. If I'm continually closed off, then there will never, ever be any kind of steps to, as a society, being able to live in peace and harmony. And that is part of what I have as a mandate, is to love people. I am called to love people, and it doesn't matter whether they believe exactly as I do or not. That's the bottom line. Love God with all my heart and love my neighbor as myself. You can't get away. Jesus said those are the two most important commandments. If you're not good at those two, if you're off, you do all the other things well and don't do that well, then you've really thrown things off. So that is kind of the congregation and the conversation, sorry. And I don't know whether we have opened a can of worms or made you think a little bit more or not. Hopefully what it has done is it's helped you to grow. Maybe it has caused you to go a little bit deeper in the way you're thinking and some of the things that are going on in your life. And again, the hope is to kind of push you out a little bit further. The hope is to have some authentic conversation that can make a difference. Now, one of the things that we have done is we set up an email, because often we're getting questions from people, and maybe you do have some questions, or maybe you have some comments, or maybe you'll even say, hey, have you ever thought of doing a podcast on this? Because this is something that I've always thought of. Then please get in contact with us. Our hope is to be a light. The idea of us is Bethel, be the light and be the love and be the length and be the love. And that is our sincere desire. That's why we are doing what we are doing right now.
Yeah. So for people listening, if you do want to send us an email, it's forgiven@bethelbrandon.ca.
That's forgiven@bethelbrandon.ca. And I'm hoping that we can get as much a response and do whatever we can to help any person in any way that we possibly can. Yeah. So with that, I think we're kind of done our conversation. I hope it has been something which has been helpful to you. Again, I'm Pastor Mike Gordon. We got Logan here with. We have Micah here. God bless you. And I'm hoping that it'll start you on a further journey in your relationship with God. God bless.